capitalism is going through a spasm caused by its own generation of technologies that undermine itself.
How can you, with a straight face, make the argument that more guns will make us safer?
We need to build a wall, and it has to be built quickly.
Hello and welcome to Level Talk Programme. My name's John Harrison. Not a week goes by before North Korea bounces back into the headlines. Kim Jong-un reminds me sometimes of a spoilt child who teases his parents, seeing how far he can go, throwing a rocket here and there to see if there's a reaction. Now, so far, there hasn't been a major one, apart from talk about applying stricter sanctions, which North Korea has been under since its first nuclear test in 2006. Now, how far can North Korea go, and is the West prepared to stand by and watch while that country becomes a nuclear power? Now, what is new is that Russia and China have started issuing joint statements on North Korea, something that's raising a few eyebrows in Washington and elsewhere. To talk about what this means, I welcome to the programme Dr. Leonid Petrov, a visiting fellow at the Australian National University. Welcome to the programme, Dr. Petrov.
Thank you, John, for inviting me on.
Now, on the 5th of July, President Putin and President Xi Jinping urged a comprehensive solution to the Korean Peninsula issue as the UN called a Security Council emergency meeting. Now, the fact that Putin and Xi called for this jointly would seem to indicate that these two powers are prepared to work together as regards North Korea. Is that true?
Well, I think so. There's many areas which Russia and China can collaborate, but North Korea is the point which brings them together. Anti-Americanism is probably the short answer to that. So, because North Korea is essentially anti-American, North Korean, you know, state is based on the premises that it's at war with the United States, despite of its victory, as it is known in North Korea. The armistice, the ceasefire, is simply emphasizing the, you know, the power of North Korea vis-a-vis the United States. So China and Russia also see North Korea as a regional whistleblower. Every time the Americans and South Koreans and Japanese start military exercises, North Korea goes ballistic. And it saves a lot of power, nerve and resources for China and for Russia. So Beijing and Moscow are unanimous in that what North Korea has to be treated fairly and must be given some security assurance. And I think what is actually a Chinese proposal of this so-called de-escalation and like the dual-track approach, say, where the North Koreans potentially might freeze their nuclear and missile programs in exchange for American suspension of joint military exercises in South Korea and potential withdrawal of anti-ballistic missile system from South Korea. I think it's very reasonable, and that's what makes Moscow and Beijing work together, and particularly this statement was made just a few days before the G20 summit, where they probably work, both Xi Jinping and Putin were coordinating their positions before this important summit. So they had to form a united front vis-a-vis Westerners, and North Korea is something what united them.
Okay, well, that's a completely different take on things than the perspective that the Western press has on it. I mean, you're saying that North Korea is only reacting to military exercises taking place in South Korea. What exercises are we talking about here? We haven't heard of anything like that, in the Western press at least.
Since 1970s, Americans and South Koreans were conducting joint military exercises, actually in probably violation of the armistice agreement. But the armistice agreement, the ceasefire, was concluded in 1953 after 3 years of very traumatic experience of the Korean War. North Korea wanted to unify the Korean Peninsula. Americans and 15 other nations stepped in and restore the border, so the division continued. But the agreement, ceasefire agreement, presumed that no new forms of weapons were going to be introduced into the Korean Peninsula. But South Korea was filled with American nuclear warheads, nuclear weapons. Joint military exercises started in 1970s, continued throughout the 1990s. They were suspended for a short time, but again resumed. And military exercises are conducted twice a year in South Korea, and they consolidate hundreds of thousands of troops. South Korean and American. U.S. strategic bombers flying over South Korean airspace approaching the demilitarized zone. They often use the live fire. They drill, you know, bombing some ranges in the islands and training and preparing basically for the invasion. This is how it's seen from North Korea, that these military exercises, which happen every spring and every autumn, is nothing but the preparation for the invasion. So North Korea is getting the message. North Korea is trying to defend itself by, well, keeping a large army at the demilitarized zone, northern side of it. But recently, since 1990s, North Korea began the development of nuclear weapons as a deterrence against potential invasion. When Soviet Union collapsed, when the communist system in the world started to collapse, well, North Koreans realized that they are on their own. They cannot even rely on the military agreement with China of 1961. China is obliged to protect North Korea if it's under attack. But Pyongyang believes that China might not live up to this agreement and protect North Korea if North Korea is attacked or invaded, or just simply if it's a preemptive strike or surgeon attack against the government facilities and if the leadership is targeted.
I think that some listeners will be somewhat shocked by what you've just said, because you're really talking about a completely different way of looking at this problem. I suppose there would be a shock, as people are, when they hear Russia's point of view is concerning the Ukraine situation, you know, and Russia being surrounded by NATO troops and in various ex-Soviet republics, now NATO members.
North Korea learned the lesson of Iraq, of Libya, and Ukraine as well. Any leader, any state which voluntarily gave up their nuclear capability or weapons of mass destruction were invaded, the regime was changed, the leader was executed, and even Ukraine, who gave up the control of nuclear facilities towards Russia, now is, you know, very regretting doing this. So technically, Ukraine would not have been, you know, losing its territories had it been still in the possession of the psychological deterrence.
Yeah, I mean, an apparent hint at the U.S., Beijing and Moscow have spoken up against sort of the so-called non-regional powers. You know, I wonder what they could be. their military presence in Northeast Asia and its build-up under the pretext of countering North Korea's nuclear and missile programs. I mean, I guess my next question to you would be, is this sort of thing about North Korea, this fixation that we now have, North Korea is the really nasty place full of evil people and a dictator who wants to nuke North America, you know, is that now a kind of way that we're being prepared, being softened up for perhaps an increased American presence in the North Pacific and possible war with China?
Yeah, well, that's the question which bothers all Korea watchers. Is it really about North Korea, or is it about the growing confrontation between the United States and People's Republic of China? Well, China is as equally paranoid about what Americans are doing in the region, because there are two main security allies in the region, South Korea and Japan. Americans have their troops in both states, American submarines roaming the waters of adjacent to the Korean Peninsula. And, of course, China understands it as interference into their domestic affairs. Particularly, China is very sensitive about the South China Sea and what Western powers are doing by refusing Chinese claims of sovereignty of these islands. So China is not prepared to give up its control of the region. And North Korea is simply serving as a watchdog, as a regional power which protects. It's a buffer state which physically separates Chinese northeastern provinces from U.S.-allied South Korea. It's also very important for Russia, because the waters, territorial waters of North Korea, is still not reachable for the U.S.-allied power. South Koreans not permitted their Japanese state. Mm-hmm. They, and Americans, despite of the promises to go to, you know, send an armada to Sea of Japan, or Eastern Sea, as Koreans call it, they send the armada in a different direction, because they know it's full of North Korean submarines, and North Korea has the largest fleet of submarines in the world. Small submarines, vulnerable, but still the number is the largest, comparable with Americans, probably.
Yeah, I'm just kind of hearing what you say. I'm just thinking of sort of a worst case scenario if war did break out between North Korea and and the States. I mean, it's not going to be like Vietnam, is it? You know, where you had China backing the guerrillas, you know, and even possibly Soviets at one time, you know. I mean, they're really on their own, though, aren't they? I mean, I really can't see China coming in. If China comes in, you're talking about the Third World War.
Anyone who talks about war in Korea is either ignorant of the power and the military might which North Koreans have, but bluffing, possibly, because, you know, having a war in this overcrowded strip of land which extends from the continental China towards Japan, it's overdeveloped region. Having a war there would be like having a war in the middle of Europe or somewhere in the eastern coast of America. Military action would immediately escalate complete disaster, given that North Koreans have nuclear weapons, that South Koreans expect that Americans would interfere and defend them again, as it was during the Korean War. South Korea is just 45 kilometers away from the demilitarized zone, which is going to be immediate target, if not nuclear weapons, but of conventional weapons. Thousands of artillery pieces trained and aimed at Seoul, with the population of 25 million people. So it's going to be a major chaos, disaster, and every day of war would cause a damage of $1 billion at least, and millions of human lives. So no one is really prepared to have fully-blown military action in Korea. North Koreans understand that it's possible, potentially, the regime can be targeted to inculcate in their population mind that the war is imminent. They must prepare for the war. They must defend their motherland until the last blood of the last soldier. But again, they understand that Americans, and that's the only power who might action against North Korea. South Koreans wouldn't do it. South Korea is not prepared to unify the peninsula because, well, despite of the claims of Seoul legitimacy on the Korean peninsula, South Koreans don't know how to rule the North. They speak the same language, but it's a completely different mentality. After 70 years of total separation, of complete insulation of North Koreans, it's impossible to rule North Korea by simply South Korean governors, and nobody would really know, you know, what to do with these new territories acquired. And also, there's a huge risk of civil war. So South Korea doesn't need it. I don't think Americans want the North Korean disappearance either, because North Korea is a very convenient enemy. North Korea looks scary, it behaves, it sounds crazy, it constantly detonates or launches something. So what a bonanza, what a wonderful excuse to sell very expensive anti-missile systems, state-of-the-art aircraft, and also naval assets to their regional allies. It's a fantastic opportunity to improve the, you know, the military-industrial complex of the United States, improve the balance of trade towards American interests, and fulfill the promise of President Trump to make America strong again. The only problem is that you need North Korea. You must misrepresent it as a scarecrow, as a destabilizing factor in the region. Otherwise, nobody would believe. That's why when North Koreans launch a short-range missile, immediately the news breaks that it was intercontinental ballistic missile. Immediately, Australians encouraged to buy very expensive anti-missile defense system.
Okay, well, let's take a short break here and we'll come back in a minute or two. Don't go away.
Capitalism is going through a spasm caused by its own generation of technologies that undermine itself.
How can you, with a straight face, make the argument that more guns will make us safer?
We need to build a wall, and it has to be built quickly.
Hello and welcome back to Level Talk Programme. Today I'm talking to Dr. Leonid Petrov, visiting fellow at the Australian National University, about North Korea. And the first half of the programme, Dr. Petrov sort of, coined a phrase, blew my mind with a completely different take on the North Korean situation. I hope that, listeners, you found it interesting. I'd like to continue this conversation and I'd like to broaden out a bit. Now, Dr. Petrov, I'm sure you agree with me that one thing that the West probably feared most of all during the Cold War was the realignment of the Soviet Union and China. This never really happened, did it? We're not in the Cold War now, officially at least, but I mean, for heaven's sakes, we're talking about Russia and China issuing joint statements together. I mean, isn't this raising a few eyebrows in Washington and elsewhere?
Well, it might be shocking news for the new Trump administration, which is known for its inexperience and for rather perverse understanding of, you know, how the world affairs should work and should operate. But still, Moscow and Beijing are surprisingly consolidated on what everything which is related to East Asian affairs. You mentioned that the Cold War is over, but not in the region of East Asia. If you look at every country of East Asia, it still lives in a divided state. At least still has the legacy of the Cold War. It's not Korea which is divided in this region, but look at China. There's the two Chinese states which are still at confrontational phase. And despite of the reconciliation trade, well, technically they don't really agree with each other. Japan lost some territories to Russia and still doesn't have peace treaty with Moscow. More than 70 years after the Second World War, technically Moscow and Tokyo can't iron out this agreement because partly the United States troops are stationed in Japan and South Korea, and any attempt at reconciliation must be endorsed by Washington, and it's not often happens. There was in a short period when Clinton administration was willing to see the both Koreans reconcile, and under Nixon administration, so China was diplomatically recognized, which permitted the miracle of the Chinese reform, and the economy jump started only after 1979 when Beijing was diplomatically recognized. So we see many issues in this region, and North and South Korea is simply the symptoms of the continuing frustration, distrust, and Cold War architecture, which was so persistently maintained up until the collapse of the communist system. There were some expectations when democratizing Russia and economically changing and reforming China promised that they would be prepared to recognize South Korea in exchange for American and Japanese diplomatic recognition of North Korea.
Yeah.
So Moscow and Beijing they lived up to their promise, and Americans and Japanese refused to do so. That's why we see the continuation of Cold War confrontation. We see this periodic and seasonal crises, which are created by the joint U.S.-South Korean military exercises in South Korea. North Korea gets the signal, it overreacts, it detonates something which I, you know, treated and seen as a threat, as intention to invade, attack, and destroy. And North Koreans actually support this fears because they need to keep their population scared. The North Korean elites also understand that without the presence of war, hostility of the surrounding nation, very difficult to maintain control over 25 million population in North Korea. So that's why North Korean, despite of the talk of peace and potential negotiations, North Korean leadership is very fearful of potential improvement of relations with South Korea, with potential restoration of peace, which would immediately undermine the importance and even legitimacy of North Korean regime.
There's an attitude, isn't there? There's a point of view, perhaps best summed up by Danny Russell, who served as Senior Asian Director at the National Security Council under former President Obama. And he made the point that without unity among the five major countries involved in dealing with North Korea, that is the US, China, Russia, South Korea and Japan, quote, North Korea is simply going to keep going forever, like the way it is.
Oh, yeah, absolutely agree with that. And you see, when the six-party talks were introduced, I was very skeptical about it because, you know, there were too many parties in the six-party talks. There was no chance that they all six would agree on something, and I believe that the idea was simply to avoid the very possibility of agreement on something. When China and Russia and even, say, Americans are ready to strike an agreement, so maybe Japanese would protest or South Koreans would find something particularly offensive and unacceptable. So the six-party talks was very difficult to maintain, and so finally the whole idea disappeared.
Dr. Petrov, may I just interrupt you, because your point of view is so unusual, for me at least, and I think it probably is for many listeners who listen to this program in the West and Western countries. Can I ask you, what kind of support is there for the point of view that you're promoting right now?
I don't think I'm telling you something unusual. I'm just giving you the perspective of how it's seen from, like, objectively from North and South Korea, from Beijing and from Tokyo. I keep analyzing the situation, this confrontation, for over 2.5 decades. Probably 30 years ago, I started watching North Korea, learning the language, following the events, and analyzing its history. So I believe that the drama which is ongoing in Korea is just simply the symptoms of the unresolved war. And Korean War was the relic of the Cold War. It was just a prototype or some surrogate World War III, which never started, but Korea actually got the brunt of these hostilities of international conflict between communism and democracy, between capitalism and centrally planned economy. So we see the North and South Korea is just the result of the very severe ideological conflict turned into an ugly war, frozen in time, and now being still, decomposing the regime in the North and South Korean economy in severe crisis because of it's just simply overdeveloped. It can't continue like this without, finding new markets, cheap labor, new natural resources, which North Korea sits on. And many countries around it are very fearful that it may happen. If North and South Koreans start talking, they may reconcile, they may reunify, and this will be the bad news for basically everyone around. China would lose a major resource of rare earth metals and a security ally next to its borders. Japan will have a major competitor in the face of unified Koreans with excellent...
Now, what about the Philippines? What's their position in this whole thing? Because they seem to have changed, haven't they, somewhat? I mean, their support for the state seems to be waning, and suddenly they're not so eager to house, endless thousands of American service people there in preparation for some new attack.
Well, again, the Philippines is a symptom of the changing Asia-Pacific region. The architecture, the security architecture of the U.S., which have been built since the end of Second World War, is now falling apart. And Philippines is just one example. We see big questions raised about the presence of U.S. troops in South Korea. Japanese even threatened that they might change the Article 9 of their constitution, where they may have their own army. They have a very powerful self-defense force. They are reliant on American military presence, but why should they?
Mm-hmm.
Say, well, Malaysia, Myanmar. We can see many countries which now raise the big question whether they should really be loyal to the United States' presence in the region, or whether should they be on their own and decide for themselves what they really want to do. And it opens a lot of questions and a lot of doors for, say, nuclear proliferation, for economic competition, reconciliation, and it will be completely the map of Northeast Asia may be completely redrawn by, say, U.S. withdrawal. And what may trigger that?
If the U.S. was to withdraw, would that mean that the situation in North Korea would change radically? Or is the necessity to create a permanent feeling of fear of not only South Korea but surrounding countries so important for the North Korean leadership that it wouldn't allow changes?
It's all interrelated. For North Korean leadership, it's important to keep their population obedient, loyal, and mobilized.
Mm.
So they basically need American troops on the Korean Peninsula for that, despite all criticism and invectives. The North Korean regime can't survive without American presence and threat.
Yeah.
But so do Americans. Without North Korea, their presence in South Korea will not be justified. They will need to pack and go. And if they go from South Korea, they will need to go from Japan as well. And in that case, well, the dynamics of inter-Korean relations.
Do you think Kim Jong-un's been sort of paid by Washington or something? Is there some sort of deal going on here whereby the regime continues? Because it's so useful, isn't it, having a scapegoat up there?
That's a beautiful partnership. I think they locked in kind of interdependence, hostile interdependence.
Hostile interdependence, yeah.
So if I can coin this term, you see, they can't survive. North Koreans need Americans, and Americans need North Korea, and Chinese need North Korea because it's a buffer state, and Russia needs North Korea because it separates and from South Korea. But I think actually Russia might be the only country, like in the region, who is genuinely supportive of soonest Korean unification, while Japanese and Chinese might be suspicious of it. Well, South Koreans will need to take all the responsibility and basically pay for the unification. They might not be willing to do so, at least right now. Russia is the country which is going to benefit from the soonest Korean unification because it will get direct access to the South Korean powerhouse, North Korean markets. It will even, the railway tracks can be extended via tunnel to Japan.
Right.
Russia will also act as a potential seller of energy, electricity, expertise, and everything which might be helpful for the reunified Korea. So it will open a great market. Right now, North Korea is like a black hole which separates Russian energy exporters from the very lucrative market of South Korea and Japan. Once they unify, it will be a very different story. So that's why Russia is so keen to see positive.
I'm afraid I've got to stop you. I've got to stop you here. We've run out of time, but what a fascinating conversation. Thank you very much indeed, Dr. Petrov.
Thank you, John.
Visiting fellow at the Australian National University. And I'm going to say goodbye to you now, listeners. My name's John Harrison. Please tune in again next week. Goodbye.